Hello and welcome back to the God Story Podcast. I'm Brent Siddle and I'm back in Palmerston North, New Zealand with Rido, the Reverend Ian Reid of King's Grace Presbyterian Church. Ian, hi, welcome back.
Hi Brent, how are you?
Oh, I'm very well. I had a very pleasant drive, apart from a 30-minute stop for roadworks.
Well, that's a long time.
It's a long time. We all turned off our engines and looked out the window at the beautiful Turrikina Valley, which, if you haven't been to New Zealand, is gorgeous. Now, we're up to our very last instalment of Mark, Rido. Where are we up to in the story?
Well, we've lost all hope. Jesus is dead. So it's kind of, what's the point in going on? If that's the end of the story, isn't it?
No. No, it's not.
Oh, okay. That's good to know.
No, everybody thought that was the end of the story, and that's the magnificent thing about it. It isn't.
Yep.
Now, verses 40 to 41 of chapter 15, there were also women looking on from a distance, among whom were Mary Magdalene and Mary the mother of James, the younger, and of Joseph and Salome. When he was in Galilee, they followed him and ministered to him, and there were also many other women who came up with him to Jerusalem. Okay, well, the ladies are there. What do we learn about the women here then?
A lot of them are called Mary.
A lot of them are called Mary, yeah.
They're there watching. No mention of the disciples.
Well, they've all run away by the stage, haven't they?
Yep.
The male ones.
Yep.
Mm.
And so you have these women watching from a distance, right? They're looking on to see what's going on and what's going to happen to Jesus.
These women have remained faithful, presumably, unlike the men.
Yeah. Mm. Yep. And you've got, it says many other women who had come up with him to Jerusalem were also there. So people, these are people who have been following, like the disciples. There wasn't just 12 people around, there would have been a large group of people following Jesus, and they're amongst that group.
Right. Okay, 42 to 47. Let's find out what happens. And when evening had come, since it was the day of preparation, that is, the day before the Sabbath, Joseph of Arimathea, a respected member of the council, who was also himself looking for the kingdom of God, took courage and went to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. Pilate was surprised to hear that he should have already died. And summoning the centurion, he asked him whether he was already dead. And when he learned from the centurion that he was dead, he granted the corpse to Joseph. And Joseph brought a linen shroud and, taking him down, wrapped him in the linen shroud and laid him in a tomb that had been cut out of the rock. And he rolled a stone against the entrance of the tomb. Mary Magdalene and Mary the mother of Joseph saw where he was laid. Okay, who is Joseph of Arimathea? I love Joseph of Arimathea.
So,
he just suddenly appears.
Yeah, he only appears here, right, in terms of the story of Mark, he only appears here. In John's gospel, there's a couple of characters that appear three times, and is Joseph of Arimathea might be one of them. I know Nicodemus is.
Could be, yeah.
But both of them appear together, actually, at the end of John. But you've got this guy, he's somewhat important. He's a member of the council, which was kind of the Jewish ruling kind of group at the time. And so he must be a reasonably wealthy kind of individual.
Mm-hmm. And what do we make of the interchange between Joseph and Pilate?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, that he's bold in going there for a start, because who wants to be associated, particularly if you're a prominent person, to be associated with someone who's just been executed by the rulers of the time, but you know, it seems, you know, reasonably normal, doesn't it?
And the centurion turns up again.
Yeah,
he gets to talk to Pilate as well.
Yeah,
which I think is interesting. Yeah, I wonder what the exchange was like.
Yeah, we're not really given a lot of detail, are we? Other than, kind of that this is what. There's no discussion, right? There's no conversation that you hear, but it's just the kind of this is what they did.
Yeah. What does Joseph actually do?
Well, he does the whole burial thing for Jesus, that which is very important in a Jewish custom. That he goes and gets the linen, gets the body, wraps it all up, does the burial preparation, and even puts him in his own tomb, doesn't he? Yeah, kind of. You've got this quite an important place where he's been placed. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's his religious significance? Or is there a religious significance to what Joseph does here? And what's the significance of the fact that he does it at Passover?
Well, touching a body at Passover is really bad, isn't it?
Mm.
Because it makes you ceremonial.
He wouldn't have been able to have the Passover.
You couldn't be a part of it. And so Yeah, and this is why they want to get it done so quickly, is because Passover is coming. And so, you know, kind of that Passover's coming. We need to eat our meal. You know, we kind of need to get on with it. Very holy day for Jewish people. And here you have Joseph. As soon as you touch a dead body, you are ceremonially unclean. It takes you 7 days, I think it is, to kind of undo that. Mm. And then you have him being prepared to do that. You know, kind of. So he can't, in some ways, what it does is it cuts you out of the community. That's the idea of being ceremonially unclean, is that you're cut off from the community.
But the irony is that he's almost certainly a follower of Jesus. So he's in the new community.
Well, and he's kind of, by doing this, he kind of declares himself as that, right? Mm. And so, you know.
And of course, at this point, he's covered by the blood because Jesus has just died.
Well, and he said, who was himself, talking about Joseph, who was himself waiting for the kingdom of God, kind of that, unlike anyone else, like he's this character that just pops up going, I'll take the body. He hasn't lost hope yet, has he? You know, at this point.
No, it's
a beautiful gesture.
And really, always a beautiful character, Joseph of Arimathea in this one. Okay, chapter 16, verses 1 to 8. Now, when the Sabbath was passed, Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James and Salome, brought spices so that they might go and anoint him. And very early on the first day of the week, when the sun had risen, they went to the tomb. And they were saying to one another, who will roll away the stone for us from the entrance of the tomb? And looking up, they saw that the stone had been rolled back. It was very large. And entering the tomb, they saw a young man sitting on the right side, dressed in a white robe, and they were alarmed. And he said to them, do not be alarmed. You seek Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He is risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him. But go, tell his disciples and Peter that he is going before you to Galilee. There you will see him, just as he told you. And they went out and fled from the tomb, for trembling and astonishment had seized them. And they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. And that's where we both, I think, agree the Gospel of Mark ends.
Most likely, yes.
Most likely. Now, why is this last part of chapter 16 of Mark so controversial?
Well, because you've got another few verses after that, don't you, until 19 to 20. Mm-hmm. And it is controversial because it seems to be that the end of Mark hasn't been finished, like it's been added on to at another point in time. It ends in such a weird, abrupt way, right? The verse 8 there of chapter 16, trembling and bewildered, the women went out and fled from the tomb. They said nothing to anyone because they were afraid. And that's the end of the story. You know, Jesus was just resurrected. That's not how it should end. And so you would want to add on to it, you know, kind of if you a part of the community, the new community.
Yeah, is that why so many scholars think that Mark really ends there? The extra bit doesn't make sense.
Well, when you read the extra bit, it doesn't fit with the rest of the story. You know, kind of. I mean, it's not. You know, kind of. There's nothing blasphemous in there or anything like that, but it's not in the same style of Mark's writing.
Mm.
And so you would. There's kind of a rule in biblical translation, particularly when you're looking at manuscripts, is that you go with the hardest reading possible because you tend to go with a harder reading because people tend to smooth things over rather than make them harder. And so it would make kind of more sense that it would end there because the last little bit seems to make it things nice and tidy and kind of closes the story, where Mark maybe is leaving it open-ended and kind of going, well, what does this mean? You know, kind of, isn't that Mark's challenge? I think that's Mark's challenge from the beginning of the book, is that he's been saying, I know who Jesus is. I'm here to show you who Jesus is. And then it kind of ends in a way where it leaves that question open.
Yeah. When does the scene with the women take place?
Well, it seems to be, it can't be just the next day, right? It has to be after his crucifixion. It seems to be if his crucifixion happened on the Friday, this seems to be the Sunday.
Sunday morning
at some time, quite early.
The third day. Yeah. Going by the Jewish time.
Yes.
Friday night.
Friday.
Friday to Saturday.
Friday is the first day.
Yep.
Because he dies before the Saturday begins.
Yep.
And then that's the first day. The second day is a Saturday. On the third day is after sunrise on the Sunday.
Yeah, yep. That's right. Yeah.
So it's not. Yeah,
it's not our day.
It's not 72 hours.
No, it's later. Not our concept of time. That's what I'm saying. That the he's working on at this point, although he's worked in earlier points on the Roman sense of time. This seems to be running according to the Jewish calculation of time, the day, which ran from sunset to sunset.
Yeah.
How are the details included here unwinding the story?
Well, who have you got coming in and witnessing this? It's the same women who saw Jesus die. It's kind of an interesting thing that women wouldn't be regarded as important enough to be, they weren't seen as reliable witnesses or anything like that. And it's just kind of like there's no body there. There's just kind of Jesus is not there. It's just kind of like, it's kind of an odd kind of ending, isn't it?
Yeah. Is there any significance to the sunrise there in verse 2?
Oh, possibly. I hadn't thought about
that. Well, one sun has already risen.
Well, yeah, there you go.
Okay, so what do these women plan to do with Jesus or do to Jesus?
Well, they're preparing his body for burial so they're kind of coming to embalm it in some way. We don't know exactly what that looks like. We're not told exactly, right? My question is, how did Joseph get the linen? Because does it say he went and bought?
I don't know whether it says he went and bought it.
Yeah, in verse 46, Joseph bought some of them. And these people that have got all the embalming stuff kind of ready to go, it's the Holy Weekend, right? Would anything be open to kind of come and do these things?
It was, or they had something in...
I'm just thinking of the practicalities.
Well, they obviously had access to the material they needed.
Yeah, but... You know, they do have a big problem. That's in verse 3. Who will roll the stone away from the entrance of the tomb? But it doesn't show that. It shows their commitment to Jesus as a friend, right? That, you know, they don't know what's going on, but they're so committed to him that he's been saying all of this stuff about who he is. And even though it doesn't seem to have come about, they're still willing to go to the tomb, give him a proper burial. Yeah. Mm.
Is there any significance to the young man sitting on the right? It's interesting that he's described as a young man, not as an angel.
Well, who do you think he is? Do you think he's an angel, or do you think he's is it Jesus himself? You know, kind of in John, it's a little bit confusing because it kind of flips between an angel and then there's Jesus there as well. It's kind of an odd kind of thing.
I've never actually thought of it as being Jesus there in Mark.
Yeah.
That's an interesting point. But it's interesting that Mark says it's a young man and not an angel. I'm assuming it's an angel. I mean, I suppose it could look like a young man and be an angel.
Isn't it interesting that because earlier on, when Jesus is being led away, you have the young man following.
Yes, yes.
He has a tunic on or something like that, and it gets ripped off him and he runs away naked.
Yeah.
But he's described as a young man as well. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But the interesting thing, I think, is the young man dressed in a white robe. What was that guy was stripped of? Was a white robe, I think.
Yeah.
But he says, don't be alarmed. That's the same. That's the thing. When you look at every instance of angels appearing in the Bible,
they say, don't worry.
They always say the same thing.
Look, don't be alarmed. Yeah,
they have angel training school, that's the first thing that they.
Well, you would be
when
alarmed.
You meet a human being. This is the first thing you have to say.
If you were confronted by an angel, you would be alarmed initially, I suspect.
Yeah,
I would be, but I've never actually seen an angel, or not that I've been aware of.
Because I think I went through every reference to angels meeting humans. I think there's only once where they don't say don't be afraid or don't be alarmed.
Isn't it interesting?
Yeah.
Yeah. $3 million question. How does Mark's resurrection account differ from the other accounts and why? Well how many books have been published on the subject over the years?
I think it's on purpose. I think Mark is saying, go and work it, you know, kind of, I've shown you who Jesus is. Now it's for you to work out, you know, will you believe?
It's interesting that to my way of thinking, and I could be completely wrong, the gospel accounts show a progression. So you don't even get inside the tomb with Matthew. You're stuck outside, and there's an angel sitting on the
boulder, aren't they?
On the stone outside.
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't go into the tomb.
Yep.
Then with Mark, you see the young man, presumably another angel, sitting on the right side.
Yeah.
And then in Luke, you get two angels.
Yeah.
And then in John, you actually run into the tomb, as it were, with John.
Yeah, with Peter.
And Peter. Yeah, and Peter, yeah. Sorry. Yes, yeah, and Peter, and, Peter John, and John. And you're actually there with them, and they run into the tomb. So you actually get – and then I think John's account is the full account of what actually happened. And I think these earlier gospel writers are presenting us with aspects of the full story. But it's – and it's written – so it's like a kind of progressive revelation.
Mm.
You actually don't get in the tomb in the first gospel, but you do by the time you get to John. I don't know whether I'm right or not, but...
No, I think it is interesting. The other thing I find interesting in verse 8, trembling and bewildered, the women went out and fled from the tomb. They said nothing to anyone because they were afraid.
Oh, and they've just been told not to be afraid.
Exactly right. And also Matthew 28, you've got the Great Commissioning, right? Kind of, which is just after this, which is about doing what? Going and telling people, and then it ends with them not saying anything, you know, kind of this. So it's kind of I think it ends this way because Mark is kind of saying this is something that you just can't stop.
Yeah.
Even if you are afraid,
mm-hmm.
it does, you just have to tell it.
Yeah. You write, it's the ridiculousness of this ending which makes it so beautiful.
Yeah.
Why so?
Well, I just think you kind of, who would end a story like this? This is the culmination of all of history coming up to this point. Would you end a story like that?
They went away and said nothing.
Nothing, right? And you're like, well, let's go home then. You kind of, because if that was the end of the story, I think this is the point, that this isn't the end of the story. The end of the story then continues on through the church and how it lives in light of this story, of this resurrection story, and this story being the center of the whole universe, is that not that we continue to write scripture, but we live in light of this story.
Okay. How does the resurrection change us now? Why is the resurrection so important?
Well, without it, then, I definitely wouldn't be a Christian. Would you be?
No, there'd be no point.
No. And, I think Tim Keller often said in his sermons that, and I agree with him, that the resurrection really is the linchpin for everything else that we believe. If you could disprove that, then you can disprove, you don't bother with the rest of Christianity. Lewis is really big on that as well, that if you could get rid of the resurrection, then Jesus is just a liar, right? He just kind of is nobody. And so, and I think this is the weird thing about particularly Western Christianity, is what's the thing that they've tried to attack the most is the resurrection, because if you can get the resurrection, then the rest just falls apart.
Mm. There we go. The end of the Gospel of Mark. Rito, it's been a real privilege and joy to go through this whole Gospel with you. And
how long has it taken us?
I can't remember how many podcasts it's taken. We've been at this for about 2 years.
Mm.
And I think you've indicated you want to do the seven deadly sins next.
I would like to.
Which you're preaching on in church at the moment. So let's do that.
In seven sermons as well.
In seven sermons. Yes. Does each sermon link up with one of the 7 days of creation?
Well, it could do. I haven't done that yet. But,
okay. All right. Thank you so much. And thanks to our creative team at Liquid Edge, who sponsor this podcast and who take care of things behind the scenes. Ian, thank you so much.
Thanks, Brent.
We really hope you've enjoyed this episode of the God Story Podcast. If you want to help us make more great episodes like this one, you can head over to our Patreon page and become a God Story Podcast supporter. You'll receive our undying gratitude, plus a few bonus goodies for your ongoing support. Just visit patreon.com/godstorypodcast. That's patreon.com/godstorypodcast. As always, you can get in touch with us via our website, godstorypodcast.com.